Shelbyville. Thanks, Mike. Like you said, my name's Chuck Souter. I'm up from Shelbyville, Kentucky this morning, so we had a nice scenic drive this morning. My wife, Rhonda, is here, so you can wave at her. Wave, Rhonda. You did. There you go. We have two children as well, Kendall and Chase. I think their picture is in the bulletin if you got one of those with the handouts. Kendall, they both had activities going on this weekend, so they weren't able to come with us. Kendall is about to turn 15 in a couple of weeks, and Chase is 13 and a half. And so having two teenagers in the house is always exciting and a little bit hectic and things. But we told them they're 16 months apart. And so if you have kids that are that close in age together, we told them from a very early age that they were just going to be best friends with each other and they didn't have really any other choice about the matter. And for the most part, they've done pretty well with that. And they like each other most of the time. Occasionally, Kendall's big sister and firstborn instincts kind of kick in. A couple years ago, it was a Sunday afternoon, we were getting ready to go to our small group, and Chase had decided he was going to bring his football with him. And for some reason, Kendall had decided that was not appropriate to do, and so she told him, Chase, no, you can't take your football to the small group. And I said, Kendall, nobody likes to be bossy. Don't be bossy. She said, I'm not being bossy. I'm just telling him what to do. So as long as we got that settled and figured out, she had those kind of strong-willed tendencies from an early age and kind of taking charge of things. Probably she was about 3.5 years old. We came home from Sunday school or brought her home from church, and her lesson in Sunday school that day was about King David. And so she had a yellow construction paper crown on her head, and she was telling us all about the story of King David. And so we got home, and I went up to change clothes or something, but I came back down to lunch. Everyone was sitting at the table, and they all had construction paper crowns on, but there was no crown for me. And so I asked Kendall, I said, well, what's the story here? And she, you know, remember, she's 3.5, and she said, well, I'm the king, and Chase is the king, and Mommy's the king. I said, well, what about Daddy? What's he? And he said, she said, Daddy's the prisoner. And so maybe you have one of those now teenage daughters at your house, too, that kind of keeps everything in focus and makes sure everything's in line that way. So that's kind of a little bit about her. A little bit more about just our family. Rhonda, she is kind of in your thing, so I'm not to insult you by reading to you, but Rhonda is a counselor by trade, so she does that. She likes music. She was a music major also in college. She likes quiet nights at home, and she likes riding her motorcycle, which those things might not seem to go together, but she's a motorcycle rider, so if any of you are motorcycle riders, you can connect with her. Chase, or Kendall, our daughter, who's about to turn 15, likes volleyball and tennis, and as a lot of teenage girls, she's very into her friends, so she likes to hang out with her friends. Chase likes, he plays the saxophone, so he's a good musician. He likes sports. He's a fantasy football legend. If you don't believe me, just ask him. He'll tell you about that. And he likes video games as well. I should say he loves video games. It's probably on the top of his priority list, and though neither of them would say it, they both do really well in school, and we're proud of them that way too. So having just two kids, teenagers at home is very hectic, like I said, and our summer this year is particularly hectic. The last 3 weeks they've traded going to camp. In fact, Chase is going to CIY today, so that's where he's headed, just like these guys were telling about. And so with all that, we had about a six-week window of all that kind of craziness, trying to think about getting our house ready for sale, trying to think about buying a house here. And if you've moved recently, you know, just all the logistical things that come with buying and selling a house. And we had a six-week window because school starts August the 4th. I'm sure you guys are excited about that. Got the date circled on your calendar. Yeehaw. But that's a short window. And we were thinking, man, in six, you know, that's just a lot. And as I'll tell you in a minute, 2.5 of those weeks, we're going to be out of the country. We're going to be over in Europe doing a mission trip. And so because our schedule was so hectic, the elders were very gracious, and they said, you know, you don't have to prepare, you know, a real sermon. Just kind of tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us about the mission trip. And, you know, about 15 or 20 minutes, that's all. And so I should say, if you're not a church person, you picked a great Sunday to be here because you can, you know, get your wife off your back because you get to check mark for coming to church, but you don't even have to listen to a real sermon. So that worked out well for you. But thank you. I feel your pain. I understand. But, you know, talk for 15 or 20 minutes about stuff you already know. That should be easy, you know, right? What they didn't add was, oh, yeah, by the way, afterwards they're going to be voting on you, so make sure you're engaging and funny, and if you could be thought-provoking too, that'd be great, you know, so we'll see what we can do. I feel a little bit like a Miss America candidate, you know, in the swimsuit competition, right? I'm right up here, you know, kind of out in the open and people judging me, all right? So we'll make a deal, all right? You act interested for the next few minutes and I won't put on my swimming suit, all right? We have a deal? All right, excellent. A little bit about me, when I'm not following the kids around and doing their activities, I love sports, all kinds of sports. I'm an IU basketball fan, Colts football fan, although I have to admit, a couple years ago, our family also suddenly became Denver Broncos fans. Maybe you can identify with that. Still got to love Peyton. For the last few years, I've written a newspaper column in our local paper, so that's been a neat experience for me. But I love sports. I've always loved sports. I grew up loving sports. In fact, I played all kinds of sports, but basketball was my first love. My parents even said that when I first started to learn how to walk, that I would toddle over to the toy box, dump them all out, just so I could pick them up and throw them back in. Right? So I was, at a very early age, I loved basketball. My dad would take me to our high school games when I was very young. I went to a high school about the same size as Edgewood, Scottsburg High School, if you know where Scottsburg is. So when I was in elementary school growing up, our teams were really good. That was back in the real days of only single class basketball. It was not a very large school, but 2 years in a row, our team went to the semi-state. So that was pretty good for a school our size. And so I got to watch those, you know, guys who I thought were just incredible basketball players and watch them climb up the ladders and cut down the nets at the sectional and then the regional. And they did it again the next year. And so I made it my goal from a pretty early age that I was going to do that. When I got old enough to be on the team, I was going to be good enough so that we could, you know, climb up those ladders and cut down the nets, because that seemed like a really good experience to me. The bad news was there wasn't a lot of people my age, a lot of guys my age that shared those aspirations, right? And basketball is a team sport, okay? And so by the time, you know, I became a starter on the varsity team my sophomore year, I thought, okay, here's my chance. But the problem was we just weren't very good, all right? If it was worse than that, we were really bad, all right? We won 3 games, all right, my sophomore year. We played a lot more than 3 games, all right? In my junior year, we were greatly improved, and we won 5 games, all right? Not too many net cutter downers on 5-win teams, all right? But by the time my senior year came around, we were actually a halfway decent team, and as tournament time came around, you know how in the newspaper, like all the sports writers will pick their winners of all the different sectionals, and half of the sports writers picked our team to win, and the other half picked our county rival, Austin, because in the regular season when we played them, we had beat them on a last-second shot, and so it was kind of one of those, could be this team, could be that team, but half of the people picked us, and I just knew it was my time. I was going to finally get to climb up the net, or climb up the ladder, and cut down the nets. Sure enough, we both won our first few round games, and we met in the sectional championship at Madison High School. There's a big crowd, and it was back and forth the whole game, back and forth, back and forth. About halfway through the fourth quarter, our starting center, who was our second leading scorer and rebounder, he fouled out of the game. So it didn't look like our chances were good, but we hung in there, and at the end of regulation, it was tied. And so the game was going to go to overtime. So we went into overtime. At the end of the first overtime, the clock's running down. We have the ball. It's a tie game. I dribble into the lane, get triple teamed, and I find a wide open teammate, Scott Montgomery, right underneath the basket. I pass him the ball. All he has to do is shoot a wide open layup, and we win the sectional tournament, and I get to climb up the ladder and cut down the net. Yeah, you can tell. So it ain't going to go that way, is it? You can just tell. So I pass it to Scott. He's wide open, and he pump fakes. Why? I don't know. But he pump fakes again, and he pump fakes again, and as he does, he moves his feet, and the referee blows the whistle and calls traveling, and so we go to the second overtime. Now, in the second overtime, near the end of that, we were ahead by 2 points, and statistically, our best free throw shooter, David Marley, got fouled with just a few seconds left. All he had to do was make one of the 2 free throws, because this is in the olden days, before a 3-point shot. So all he had to do was make one free throw, and we were guaranteed the victory. I could climb up the ladder and cut down those nets, because this was what I was born to do. This was my destiny, to climb up those nets, or climb up the ladder. He missed. both times. They threw the ball in, went down, scored a tying basket, and so we go to the third overtime. At the end of the third overtime, the score was tied again, and once again I had the ball, and I drove in and was triple teamed, and I passed it to an open teammate, Bobby Coomer. Now, Bobby Coomer had made a last-second shot in our regular season game against Austin to win the game, and once again, just as the buzzer sounded, he let the ball go, and it swished through the net, and we celebrated. Yes, it was finally, my destiny had come true. I'm the winner. I'm going to climb the ladder and win, cut down the nets, because I'm a champion. But the referee was blowing his whistle and doing this, saying, no, it was too late. It was too late. It doesn't count. So we go to the fourth overtime. In the fourth overtime, once again, we have it's a tie game, and our team has the ball near the end, and I'm driving into the basket. I go up for the shot, and a guy comes over my back, hits me in the head, but kind of pins the ball up against the backboard, but I hear the whistle blow, and I just know it's a foul, and I'm going to get to finally win this game and be done with it once and for all, and I'm going to be a champion and climb the ladder and cut down the net. But as I turn to look at the referee, he blowed his whistle, all right, but he was calling a jump ball. Terrible call. I was definitely fouled. Go to the tape. You'll see. So we go to the fifth overtime. Nothing really happened in the fifth overtime, to tell you the truth. Nothing. So we went to the sixth overtime. The end of the sixth overtime, once again, the score is tied. And the coach calls timeout. We have the ball with about 30 seconds left. He calls timeout. Now, I'm not making this up. We're sitting there on the bench. And he said, Chuck, what do you think we should do? And I said, give me the ball. This game is over. We're going to end this game. So they gave me the ball, and as you know, seen people do, I'm watching the clock, just standing out there dribbling the clock down from 30, and about 10 seconds left, I make my move, and I drive down the left side and plant my foot on the baseline to go up for the game-winning shot. Happened to plant my foot right on a spot that someone had obviously sweat and dripped a lot of water there, and my feet slipped out from under me, and the ball bounced off my leg and went out of bounds. And so with 6 seconds left, they threw the ball into a reserve guard that hadn't scored the whole game. He went down and scored the game-winning basket. And we lost in six overtimes. That's all I get? Ah. I mean, I pour my heart out. This was my destiny, people, my destiny. You tell me your heart-wrenching story sometime. See if I cry for you. No, it ain't going to happen. All right? No sympathy here. It was months after that happened before I could tell that story and still sleep at night, because it meant that much to me. At that point in my life, that was my life. That had been my goal, my dream for years. I had worked toward it, and because of a mistake that I made, it didn't happen. I saw it trickle away just as that ball rolling out of bounds. That was kind of a metaphor for my life later on. So many times in my life, I have tried to rely on my own talent, my own intellect, my own ability, my own righteousness. And so many times, like Rob was sharing in his communion thought, even when I try to do good, it doesn't go well, and the ball bounces away. And I think through those times, God was telling me and teaching me that when I am weak, He is strong. I'm reminded of the little kid's song of Jesus loves me. Jesus loves me, this I know, or the Bible tells me so. Little ones to Him belong. They are weak, but He is strong. And there's just so many of those but God moments throughout the whole Bible. You know, when things look bleak, but God steps in and things change. I think of the story of Joseph, not Mary's husband, but the guy with the technicolor dream coat. You know, him. His brother sold him into slavery and left him, they were going to leave him to die, and then they sold him into slavery. And later, after God had changed the story all around, Joseph said, you meant this for harm, but God meant it for good. Think of Moses and the Red Sea. From a human perspective, it was totally bleak. Here comes the Egyptian army. They were dead for sure, but God stepped in. Then in the New Testament, Peter, in Acts 3, tells the Jews who had just crucified Jesus, you killed the Lord of life, but God raised Him from the dead. There's all kinds of those but God stories. Maybe we'll do a series on that sometime. But God steps in. Maybe you have had but God moments in your life as well. You thought the marriage was over, but God stepped in. You thought you didn't know how you were going to pay the bills, but God stepped in. you were on one career path, but God redirected. Maybe you have some of those but God moments in your life as well. Some of those but God moments I've experienced in my travels to Poland. This will be my 13th summer to lead a trip to Poland to do a mission trip. We do a basketball camp for teenagers, really middle school through college age, young people from all over Eastern Europe. And so there's young people from Poland, but also Lithuania, Ukraine, Belarus. Sometimes there's been Czech Republic or Germany. It's just been a really neat experience over those years to see how God works and how He moves all around the world. It changes how you look at the news when you see what's happening in Ukraine and you actually know people that live in that part of the country. And so that's been just a great experience. I could tell you lots of different stories. I could tell you about Marcin, who I met in the first years that we went, who was a great basketball player. And as he got older, he had a chance to actually play in the top professional league in Poland, the one that Jordan Holes went to play for. And that's not the NBA, but it's a pretty comfortable living and playing basketball. But he turned down that offer because he felt God calling him to the ministry. I tell you lots of stories about kids that were affected and who accepted Christ through this camp that we've been a part of. Maybe one of the most significant moments that I remember, this whole idea of what's impossible with God, with man, but God stepping in, is the very first year I went. One night, late July 2002, I'm sitting outside the camp there with the director of the camp, Maui Dwalot, and he just told me how a month before they had lost 60% of their funding. Just abruptly, they had been a part of an international mission organization who had gone through some kind of a change in leadership and just suddenly decided not to support them anymore. And he was talking about the plans and the vision that he thought God had placed on his heart and for the ministry. He said, I don't know where the money is going to come from. I don't know how God's going to do it. But God will figure out something. And he just said it so matter-of-factly, just so calmly. There was no sense of anxiety, no sense of worry, no sense of, oh my goodness, what are we going to do? And I thought, wow, to have faith like that, to just say, I don't know how God's going to do it. To me, it's impossible, but God will figure something out. The very next summer, I sat there at the very same place with the very same man talking about what had happened in that last year. He said, it was incredible what's happened. We built this new building, which I could see that we now worship in still and have our main meetings there. They hired two more full-time staff to be a part of the ministry, and they ended the year in the black. He said, money just came from all kinds of places that I had no idea about, but God knew about. See, most of our tendency in a case like that, we would, budget shortfall like that, we would immediately cut programs and cut staff and try to figure out how to make it work. Now, both options are valid if your goal is to end in the black, right? Both ways will work. One way makes it work, humanly speaking, and the other way makes it work, allowing God to work and make something that's impossible possible. And so just many times I've seen the faith of the staff over there, and while I love going over to meet the young people from all the different countries, I'm most excited about just spending time with their staff and with the leaders because their faith is so big, and I feel like when I rub shoulders with them, it enables my picture of God to grow a little bit bigger as well. That's why I'm so excited for our whole family. All four of us are going for the very first time this year. Rhonda has been a few times in the past. Kendall, our daughter, has gone the last two summers with me, but never more than two of us at a time. But this summer, we're all four going, and so we're just really excited about that. And we leave next Saturday for our trip, so we'd appreciate your prayers along those lines. But just all those stories of, with man, it's impossible, but God makes things possible. My very favorite but God event in the whole history of humankind, Rob already talked about this morning when he talked about for communion. In the beginning of Romans 5, Paul lays out in pretty good detail what sin did to the world and how sin came into the world and broke everything and infected all of us. And that we were lost, we were far from God, we were hopeless, helpless. In Paul's words there in Romans 5, we were powerless to do anything about it. Romans chapter 5, verse 8, that he already read, I'll read it for you again, says, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this, while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. It's the best but God event in all of human history. We were lost, nothing we could do, the best efforts of ours ended in a slipping and the ball rolling out of bounds, all right? The best that we have to offer wasn't good enough, and there, we were hopeless and powerless to do anything about it. But God, because of his great love for us, stepped in, sent Jesus to die for us. That's the greatest "but God" story in the whole world. Would you pray with me? God, I thank you for specializing in the impossible. God, I thank you for using our weakness to be strong. God, I thank you for taking hopeless, helpless situations where we're powerless to do anything. And if we trust you and if we look to you, you step into the picture and make things go a totally different direction. God, I thank you especially for doing that when you sent Jesus to die for us, to die for me, because my best efforts ended in a losing effort. Thank you for that through Jesus. And in his name we pray. Amen.